Section 1, me. Introduction, rewiring the optic cortex, how I hone the skill, and seeing differently from the inside out. Hello, my name's Pete Eckert. I'm a totally blind photographer. I haven't always been blind. For half my life I could see. I was once a sculptor and I had intended to go to school to be an architect. At that time I started to lose my vision. I decided to get a master's in business administration and a black belt in Taekwondo instead. My two main fears were how to defend myself and how to make money. While in graduate school, I lost more vision. One morning I woke up and my balance was affected so much that I was having difficulty walking. I certainly couldn't ride my bicycle back and forth to school as I had been. At that time, I had about enough vision to read books at one or two letters at a time. I had to clear my mind's eye to ride my bicycle even before the vision loss. If I daydreamed at all, the daydreams were so strong that I couldn't see what was ahead of me. So I'd have to clear my mind like a Zen monk to ride the bicycle. I decided that I would try to build a different way of seeing using my mind's eye because of this. I wanted to use sound, touch, and memory to build some kind of mind's eye vision. First, I tried to clear the optic cortex and see if I could rewire it. Within 2 days, I was able to ride my bicycle again. This convinced me that it was possible to quickly rewire the optic cortex, a concept that changed my life. I was in Taekwondo, and the teacher and I had an agreement that he wouldn't tell anybody that I was legally blind at the time. I went through, just as any other student would that was sighted, and learned to spar. I honed my skills sparring at full speed, rewiring the optic cortex using sound, touch, and memory. To do this, I had to listen to how the sound reflected off the walls and overlay the opponent as if he was a rock in a river and the sound was wrapping around him. I did something similar riding my bicycle on the street. While in graduate school, I still did artwork. I was using high contrast graphic drawings and woodcuts to dump my bad feelings about going blind. I didn't want to succumb to depression about going blind, but I was looking for something more positive and something faster than doing the woodcuts. While cleaning out a drawer one day, my wife found me playing with my mother-in-law's old 1950s Kodak Retina 2. It was a mechanical camera, and my wife showed me the different settings on it. I was amused to find out that the camera had an infrared setting. A blind guy doing photos in a non-visible wavelength amused me. Also, the name of the camera, a Retina 2. I had two retinas that didn't work, and here was a camera named a Retina 2. I started doing night photography in infrared. So they were black and white photos with some infrared flares and characteristics. Right from the start, I got good results, and I brought the images to camera shops to get some feedback. I had always had critiques on my artwork throughout art school, so this didn't feel funny to me to ask people for some feedback. I had a memory of what I had done and the situation, so the event and the feedback seemed to fit together well. I was searching for a new system or a new way to do artwork. Doing woodcuts and drawings were slow and feedback was difficult. People liked what I was doing, but they were also not very positive. I wanted to do something much more positive with the artwork. I decided to build a photographic method using the skills I had learned in photography. At that time, too, before I had gone blind, I used to shoot pistols to relax my eyes, just slow-speed target shooting. I no longer use firearms. But all of the martial arts skill and the handling of the pistols did translate well into photography. I searched for different methods and different types of photography that fit blindness. At first, I was just doing what I call tourist photography. I was mimicking what sighted people did. And at best, I could look as if I was sighted through my photos. I decided that I needed a method to differentiate my photos from sighted people to show the world of the blind. After all, I was a blind man in the dark, handing photos over to the sighted people to give me feedback. I wanted to show my world, not theirs. I realized that blind people saw the world much differently. Sound, touch, and memory gives a much more ethereal view of the world. Sighted people tended to take their cameras and go out into the world searching for information to take photos of. I did something a little bit differently. I was preconceiving images and then going out and searching for the parts to build images. It was as if I was seeing from the inside out instead of from the outside in. I had to search for a way to differentiate my photos to show the world of the blind instead of the world of the sighted. Section 2, Adaptation and Equipment. Event versus product, equipment, adaptations, and problems with digital. I decided that the event of taking the photo was very important to me. I needed to keep that section clear just for the blind, just me. So when I take photos, I memorize what I'm doing, I compose the shot in black and white, I develop the film, and then I produce a contact sheet. At that point, I involve sighted people in a critique to give me feedback on my product. I compare my memory of the event of taking the photo with sighted people's descriptions, sighted friends' descriptions of the contact sheet. At that time, I decide which ones I pick to enlarge. I do this for a couple of reasons. I liked having the bridge and the critique with the sighted folks, but also there's an economic reason. I could have a simple mistake, like having the lens cap still on, and I can't afford to make large prints that aren't successful. Think of it this way. A painter has a conversation with his canvas, and working back and forth, he produces a product that he brings to viewers in galleries. I've changed this artist artwork triad to be myself, the event, the product, the contact sheets, feedback back and forth, and then I produce a product to show to gallery viewers. Gallery viewers are important to me. My work is not accessible to the blind. My own work I can't see. So I go to all of my gallery openings to discuss the work with patrons. Occasionally a blind person will come in and I can describe in full my own work to them. Who better to describe my work than myself? To have such control, I need to learn a lot about my equipment. I have three basic cameras, small, medium, and large. I've retired my mother's Kodak Retina 2. It was a mechanical camera and a good camera for its day, but it had a lot of mechanical safeguards that prevented me from doing the very things I wanted to do to differentiate my photos. I replaced that camera with a Canon point-and-shoot. My next two cameras, I have a Mamiya Flex that's a twin-lens reflex, a medium format camera, and a Toyo 4x5 large view camera with a Rodenstock lens. While I was learning photography, I asked a lot of questions at camera stores. The Mamiya Flex, the first one I used, was lent to me by the camera store. They wanted to give it to me. They said that they were waiting for a starving student that deserved one, and they offered it to me, but I said I didn't fit the bill, so I gave the camera back and sought for a similar one to purchase. That camera I altered quite a bit. I filed into the rails to find focal distances. I put braille dots all over it. I altered it quite a bit to make it blind friendly. I like the old mechanical cameras because they click into position and they're very tactile. I did a similar thing with the large view camera. My tripods, again, I have three, small, medium, and large. I don't drive, so weight is a consideration. When I go out, it's myself, my guide dog, my camera kit, and my tripod. It looks like I'm going off to war. I took an old Weston light meter and took the light, the glass off of it and put Braille dots on it so I could have some sense of light. While you're outside, the Sunny 16 rule and your own common sense can help you find how much light there is. But in between, in a semi-dark room, it's difficult. I rarely use the Weston light meter outside, but in restaurant scenes and other things, I tend to use it some. I believe that there's apps that you can get for your iPhone that are much better than the adaptation I've done. I also developed my own negatives. To do this, I made a few adaptations. I have a talking time stopwatch and a tactile thermometer. At first, I had an auditory thermometer that I had just put a piece of tape over the sensor and then dipped this into the chemistry. The chemistry would get into it, and eventually the thermometer would say, it's 159 degrees outside, unsafe to go outside. While this was amusing, it was costly, and I'd have to replace the thermometers every few months. I noticed that one thermometer, a chemical thermometer, had a method to recalibrate it. I took the thermometer apart, took the bezel and glass off of it, and filed a notch in at 68 degrees, proper chemical temperature, and I haven't had any troubles with it since. I have two enlargers. These have been adapted also for blind use. One I do small prints, I call them sample prints, and one I do large prints. I have some difficulty with this because checking for dust spots and things like this is kind of difficult for me because I don't see. I use the talking stopwatch and the thermometer for the chemistry again for this. My little Canon point-and-shoot, I've played with some just to investigate the jump to digital. Modes are very difficult for me. It's difficult to find my position on the cameras because they don't speak. I'm interested in iPhones. Series is a great advantage for blind people. I would love it if there was a high-end digital camera that would also incorporate something like Series that I could ask questions to. The light meter could also be included. The digital divide concerns me. Blind people are being left behind as digital technology races ahead. While technology is what will make the blind able in the sighted world, I am concerned that we're forgotten about as devices are being produced. Section 3, my work. Painting with light and double exposures. Visual metaphors, one-shot cinema, blind people see the world as if immersed in water. I learned a lot from asking questions at photo stores. I also learned quite a bit from the Time Life books. At first, I went to the library and tried to get access to these books, but they were reference books, so I couldn't take them out, and there was no talking computer. My wife helped me find these at yard sales, and I bought a talking computer so I could be able to read them. In the Time Life books, I found that in the 40s, a photographer had strapped lights onto a dancer and set up his camera on a tripod in the dock. The results were interesting. They showed lyrical wave-like lines with bits and pieces of the dancer. I later learned that the technique was called painting with light. Painting with light, I set up my tripod on a camera on a tripod and open the shutter in the dark, and then I add light to the subject. Doing this, I use my voice talking to the model as a bat would to give echolocation. My voice bounces off the walls of my studio and wraps around the model to give me a parallel axis so I can get a low resolution idea of where she is and how she is situated to compose the image. While I can't see details like her hair color or her expression or if she has tattoos, I can get a very good image of her silhouette using this technique. Painting with light mimics the sense of touch, so it's a good metaphor for my method of seeing. I also like to do a lot of double exposures. Double exposures truncate time as if it's a memory. So Along with painting with light, using double exposures, I can build up an image. I do a lot of preconceiving of what I'm doing. Rather than going out into the world and seeking an image, I try to decide on where I'm going and build an image in my mind's eye, and then try to go out and capture that image. I'm always searching for visual metaphors. As I said, blindness and blackness are related, so there's a lot of black in my photos. I truncate time using double exposures. Also, I use a lot of ghosting. I can't see faces, and so I try to avoid or mask or blur faces. I noticed that my photos were starting to get very surreal. Where I live is very surreal. It's, I can't see people, so are they ghosts? Are they real? Sounds bouncing around, and there's a lot of misconception. I try to put all this into my photos. Noticing the surreal sense of this, I am working on one-shot stories that I call one-shot cinema. I try to elicit a subtext from my viewers describing a story in their own words in a single image. I'm not always successful at this. I have two very similar pieces, Night Dream and Serene. In Night Dream, there's a small boat, and it looks like it's sinking, and an image rising up as if it's flying off to heaven in a dream. People interpret this many different ways. I did a second image to try to lead the viewers a little bit better. Serene has a small boat on a body of water with an image rising above it. The boat's easily recognizable, and the water and the figure looks as if it's rising in a dream. I've put a lot of Christian imagery, Christian enter to this. The boat, the water, and the fish-shaped woman rising above the boat are all Christian symbols. Section 4, the senses. Seeing with sound, touch, and memory. A rock in a river. Bone light. A baby learning to see. Vision masks the potential of the other senses and an opportunity to see differently. Seeing with sound, touch, and memory is slower than seeing with vision. Think of it as seeing at sound speed rather than at light speed. There's lots of room for misinterpretation. You may have heard the saying that my eyes were playing tricks on me, so there's also room for misinterpretation with vision as well. The misinterpretation of sounds becomes part of my artwork because I'm still struggling to find my way using sound through the sighted world. There's also phantom senses. Think of you may have heard of a person that has an amputated limb and they can still feel the missing limb. I have a phantom sense that I can see light emanating from the skeletal structure in my body. When I'm healthy, it's so bright that I can feel the warmth emanating off of it. It's nothing like real vision, though, because I can put my hand behind my head and still see my fingers. When I'm very healthy, it's so bright that I can actually see some of the flesh on my right hand. I think this is some kind of biofeedback. It would be much more convenient if I could actually see people around me, even if they were just skeletal structures. There's many methods of seeing with sound. There's reflected sound, there's sound that wraps around an object, and there's sounds that you create to make an echo to bounce back to you. Think of sound as a rock in a river. The water wraps around it, causing an eddy on the other side. This causes a sound shadow that you can get parallel axis to get an idea of the size of the object and also the position of the sound source. I use reflected sound in my everyday life. As I walk upstairs, the sound reflects off of each stair so I can hear each stair as I'm walking up. And then the sound opens up at the top so I don't have to count the stairs going up or down because I can hear the openings and the reflected sound. You all have heard that the tinny sound of tiled rooms compared to a soft sound of an upholstered living room. Sound has texture. As sound bounces off a grassy lawn, it's much softer than as it bounces off of concrete. You can hear the front compared to the back of cars. As you walk along a city street on the sidewalk, passing a telephone pole and cars are driving on the other side, you can get parallel access on the pole itself. This is possible with parking meters, but parking meter poles are much smaller, so the sound shadow is smaller and the sound signature of the object above it, the parking meter head, can be heard. So it sounds as if they're floating. It's easy to have misconceptions of these if you don't actually walk up and label the sound signature by touching it and associating it with the object. Babies learn to see slowly. They don't associate what they're seeing with the object at first. Even though I'm middle-aged, I'm a baby learning to see using sound shadows and finding the sound signatures, the objects that cause the sound shape. I first found this when I was sparring in Taekwondo and trying to struggle to learn to find my way with my guide dog on the street. The risks were high and my motivation was even higher because I wanted to succeed. In Taekwondo, I was teaching a black belt class, and my students wanted me to teach them how to spar blindfolded. Even though these were smart, powerful men, they had difficulty, and I wondered why. I realized that sound actually masks, that vision actually masks the potential of the other senses. Think of it this way. You have so much attention span. When you take vision out, your brain has all that extra area in the optic cortex to move into to expand the potential of your senses. Conversely, you have vision blocking the potential of the other senses. So I am not visually impaired. I am sound and touch enhanced. I'd rather see the world more positively than negatively. I have an opportunity to investigate the world at a very different place than I had first thought of as a sculptor. I'm choosing to make photos in a darkened room and slide them under the door to be viewed in the world of the sighted. My artwork is evidence that some of my methods do produce good work. Thank you.